God has this conversation with Elijah right at the end of the mountain, and he says, okay, now that you have restructured remembered who I am in the midst of your battles, you've done a lot of great work, Elijah, but now you're going to go and call somebody else. And so 1 Kings chapter 19, we're going to read a couple verses and then pray and break them down. 1 Kings chapter 19, verses 19 through 21. This is what the author writes. So Elijah went from there, the mountain, and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen, and he himself was driving the 12th pair. Elijah went up to him and threw his cloak around him. Elisha then left his oxen and ran after Elijah. This isn't confusing at all. Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye. This symbol of just intimacy and respect. He says, let me go before I follow you. Let me go and say goodbye, and then I will come with you. Go back, Elijah replied. What have I done to you? Verse 21, so Elisha left him and went back. He took his yoke of oxen and slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat and gave it to the people, and they ate. Then he set out to follow Elijah and became his servant. Will you pray with me? God, thank you for your words, your holy scriptures that we have to be able to meditate on, to study, to pray over, to learn from, to be a part of, God, that have survived centuries and centuries, God. And you are directing us today to perhaps live similarly to what Elijah just did. I pray, God, for everyone who has entered into this church, into this building, God, maybe after a long week, a struggling week, battling exhaustion, mental health, maybe tensions arise in the home, or perhaps just raising a middle school boy. We just give all of these things to you and ask that you open our eyes and soften our hearts. In your name I pray, amen. Well, this story is a little bit emotional for me as I was writing the message for this week and praying over it and thinking about it, because I have personally been a beneficiary of what we're gonna be talking about today. And so the title of the message is Pass the Cloak. Pass the Cloak. I remember the first time that I ever taught at Crossbridge. It was my ninth grade year of high school at the YMCA. I went up to my dad, who was the lead pastor at the time here, and I shared with him at the house, Dad, I feel like God's calling me to teach a message at the church. Was anyone around still at the YMCA for this message? A couple of us? Well, a lot more than I realized. Because we're like, hey, they're going to have a ninth grader teach. We out of here. And so I went up to him, and my dad, lead pastor at the time, and I can't, being in similar shoes to where he is now, I can't even fathom what kind of position I put him in. Because it's not every day your ninth grade son says, hey, God tells me that I'm supposed to teach at Crossbridge someday, and I think it's going to happen soon. Like, can you imagine type pressure? Like, hey, son, I don't think you heard from God. Like, or like, hey, buddy, I don't think you're ready. There really wasn't any correct way to go about this. Except perhaps what he did, because he talked to Bruce, so he could perhaps use him as a scapegoat. But they both found a Father's Day message where my dad went up and taught the first half, and then as his son, I came up and taught the second half. It was ninth grade. And it was so cool. At a very early age, my dad didn't shoot me down, didn't say no, but he said, I see in you something special. And then 2 weeks later, I said, Dad, I think God's calling me to teach again at Crossbridge. My dad's like, okay, buddy, can't do this every time. But only then, for 8 years later, I'd be starting my tenure here at the church as young adults pastor, then online pastor, now to co-lead pastor, following in his footsteps after he passed. And it was just so important for me, not just with that, but I had so many people in my life who looked at me and said, I see something in you. Even Barb and Brad Maddox letting me, as a ninth grader, again, a ninth grade year was apparently a really weird year for me, of God letting me referee football games and basketball games. of this ministry, that the C3 Sports and Upward that they had just built up, and then allowing this crazy immature kid to run fields at a very young age. And different small group leaders who would allow me to lead in different small groups. I still remember Ron Grimo, Trevor, our former youth pastor, when he would teach for us when he could still put up with the middle schoolers and the high schoolers. 14 years ago when I was in youth group, would still, he would always give me, because what he would do is he would break us off into groups, and he would give me what he would consider the hardest passage to break down in Scripture. I didn't even know he was going to be here today, but he's right there. Hi, Ron. And so he's sitting there. He's like, hey, you take the Romans passage. You know, I want you to break these down for the group, and just trusting me at a young age. And I was just empowered so many times, time after time after time. And it instilled in me that I realized at such a young age, I'm able to do what I love because of those people. Because person after person, male and female, one after another, said, Jordan, I see in you. I see something in you. I'm going to trust you even though you are an immature ninth grader and going to make mistakes. I'm going to trust you to fail, but then get back up. And those four words, I see in you, are so important for today's message. Because like I said, I'm a direct beneficiary of people seeing something in me. And how we as a church have always shifted our focus and our eyes to humble ourselves and chase after the next generation. And I shared this when we announced it the first Sunday of January. I don't know if you all realize how humbled I am to be in the position I am, but even just to work with Brad, who's an 84-year-old genius, and just with his wisdom and brilliance, trusting a 27-year-old doofus. He's not 84, he's only 71. Come on, guys. But even just the humility it takes to allow this young guy to just co-lead with him, it's again another instance where God has used someone to say, I see in you, Jordan, I see in you. And yet I know that my time has already come to start seeing in things of the next generation. That's why I still volunteer with the middle school boys and why I love hanging out with the teens. Because I get to see leaders transform into incredible men and women who are changing the world. And after this D-Now weekend, friends, it always refreshes me. I am so encouraged about the state of the church. And I don't just say that just to like say that. Every time we do our summer trips or our D-Now weekends and I get to watch teenagers worship, I am so encouraged. And I tell people all the time who are worried about the things they see in the media and worried about the different situations that our teens are either engaging in or up against. And I tell them, they're like, man, I feel like the church is going downhill. And I just remind them, if the gates of hell won't take the church down, neither will middle school boys. I promise you. I promise you. They may smell, but they're not going to take down the church. And so that reminds us then of this passage today. I want to actually break down those three verses, then we're going to jump to 2 Kings. So, Sean, if you can put back up the first three verses of 1 Kings 19, I want to walk through what happens. Okay, Elijah, who had just been this all-star prophet, remember, he had just performed this miracle through God of producing flour and oil just because he finds this widow of Zarephath over and over again. It is all God's work. But then he goes and he resurrects her son. And then after that, he goes and he duels against the prophets, outmatches them, and then with God's help, navigates through depression. He does so many cool things. And probably still in his prime in some way. This has only been a 3.5-year span. And God says, hey, I need you to go and find this young guy, Elisha, who is currently working the fields for his father, and call him to follow you because he's who I've got next. And so let's walk through this again. 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 19. So Elijah, immediately, there's no hesitation. There's like, no, but I still got a couple years left. He's like, God called, so I go. Verse 19, Elijah went from there and found Elisha, son of Shaphat. He was plowing with 12 yoke of oxen. Here's something we know, okay, 12 yoke being about 24 oxen, two on each yoke. He had 11 servants because it says that he himself in this next verse was carrying one of the oxen. Can you imagine? He was carrying one of the yokes, two oxen, to plow the field. So it implies that he had 11 other servants that were doing the rest of the work. So what we can just interpret from this implication is that perhaps Elisha came from a place of wealth. Okay, he could afford these servants and these oxen. But here's what's also so fascinating to me is that God had called someone who was plowing in the fields. Because what we're going to learn in 2 Kings is that at the time of Israel, there were these schools of prophets, is what they called them, or these companies of prophets, where people who were perhaps on the track to become a prophet or to do God's work for Israel would come together into these different schools to learn the laws found in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And so they would go to study, similar to what we see in the Pharisees and the religious leaders in the New Testament, which actually only Pharisees and the Sadducees only became a sect about 300 years before Jesus was born. And so it was a very new tradition for them. Before that was the school of the prophets. Elisha wasn't smart enough to be with the school of the prophets. Okay? He was someone who was more into manual labor. Maybe this was from just the family line, that they were plowing the fields, but God still found favor in his eyes. And he himself was driving the 12th pair. I love this language. Then Elijah then went up to Elisha, hadn't met this dude before, and he takes his cloak off of him. Borrowed this from Bridge Kids. It doesn't fit me very well. It fits me actually pretty well, but that's because. And so takes his cloak off of him, and he wraps it around Elisha. And it's such powerful language we have that symbolizes Elijah passing the cloak on to the next prophet of God. And for whatever reason, in all of what I was studying and praying about, this symbolized some sort of passing the torch. There wasn't necessarily anything significant about the prophet cloak. A lot of different sects wore different cloaks. Prophets did have cloaks, but so did a lot of men of their day. It was just how they dressed. But Elisha knew somehow in this very next verse, verse 20, that this was symbolizing a passing of the torch. Because verse 20, Elisha then left his oxen and ran after Elijah. You almost have this space of maybe where Elisha's sitting there. He's sitting there with this cloak around him, just kind of processing what just happened. Like, who's that dude? And then he realizes that this was God ordained, drops what he does, and he chases after Elijah. And this is their encounter. "Let me kiss my father and mother goodbye," he said, "and then I will come back to you." And Elijah says, "What have I done to you? Like, go, of course, come back." So Elisha drops everything, kills the oxen, burns the stuff. It's like he's getting rid of everything that could possibly hold him back. You may recall, if we jump to the New Testament, where Jesus has a similar encounter with some individuals where he calls them and they say, "Let me go back to my father first." You're like, how's that any different? Okay? Well, first, Elisha promises that he'll come back, okay? Second, though, he backs up his promise by getting rid of anything that could be holding him back. Because what Jesus does is Jesus says, "Nah, if you're going to leave, you're not coming back. Because when you go back to your family of wealth, you're going to see what they have, and you're not going to be able to live in this discomfort." Elisha does the opposite. He makes sure that his family of wealth isn't able to stop him from coming back. So he goes, he says goodbye, and then he chases after Elijah. Verse 21, "So Elijah left him and went back. He took his yoke of oxen, and he slaughtered them. He burned the plowing equipment to cook the meat." Maybe his dad was like, "You could have just, like, kept it for me. Like, now we're out 12 oxen, or 24 oxen and 12 yoke," and anyway. Then he set out to follow Elijah and become his servant. Here's what's so important about this story. It shows us again this season of transition. Sometimes, yes, you saw God call people and they immediately started leading. But then you have this example of where God calls Elisha and prepares this season of a couple of years of transition between Elijah and Elisha. shows us how to lead the church in just a healthy way. It doesn't happen all the time where you can have these seasons of transition, but I think that's why with C3 Sports and with youth ministry, and even with children's ministry, we were able to have months of transition between the two leaders. And it takes a lot of humility of the one who is leaving to stay long enough to be able to allow that transition. Pick up the story with me then in 2 Kings, because the scriptures then go on to a couple other characters and stories in the Bible that are irrelevant to Elijah and Elisha. But then in 2 Kings, directly following 1 Kings, we have kind of the dismissal, because Elijah and Elisha go on to do different ministry areas. Elisha is learning under Elijah, and then the story picks up in chapter 2, but we're going to pick up in verse 7. 50 men from the company of the prophets, and again, that can also be interpreted as the school of the prophets, company of the prophets went and stood at a distance facing the place where Elijah and Elisha had stopped at the Jordan. Elijah took his cloak, I love this language, he took his cloak and he rolled it up and then he struck the river. Just again, the symbol of God's power, summoning God's power, and the river parted. And then they walked through on dry land. And Elisha's just like, probably like Dustin, when he's like, I do this all the time. And so Elisha sees this with this cloak, and it's so powerful. Verse 8, Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, struck the water with it, and the water divided to the right and to the left, and the two of them crossed over on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, tell me what I can do for you before I am taken from you. Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit, Elisha replied. It's such an odd thing for us in our culture to ask, but you have to think about the symbolism of what is happening. God has literally called Elisha to be the next leader, the next major prophet of Israel. And so this concept of the spirit for them, of the spirit leading them, was just so symbolic of what it is like with us today. As Christ followers, we all have the Holy Spirit living inside of us when we accept Christ as our king. And so this is what Elisha essentially is asking for. He sees Elijah and he's like, yo, you got it. I want what you have, brother. Verse 10, you have asked a difficult thing, Elisha said. Yet if you see me when I am taken from you, it will be yours. Otherwise, it will not. As they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel. And Elisha saw him no more. Then he took hold of his garment, and he tore it in two. And so you've got this insane situation where Elijah goes, and he parts the Jordan. They cross over. They have this conversation, and then God comes with this chariot of horses and fire. And, of course, it's got to be the most dramatic thing for Elijah to, like, ascend up to heaven. And that's part of why we see a lot of New Testament characters or stories where they idolize this Elijah guy. Like, this dude resurrected someone from the dead. He healed the sick. He performed miracles. He slaughtered the prophets of Jezebel. And he was able to ascend on a chariot up to heaven. That's cool. This has to be the second coming of our Christ. And so Elisha's standing there. He rips his clothes. I'm not going to do that. He's looking up. And then this verse happens. Think about our previous chapter, how important this next verse is. Verse 15. Elisha then picked up Elisha's cloak that had fallen from him and went back and stood at the Jordan. Friends, don't miss how important this is then. Next verse. He took the cloak that had fallen from Elijah, similar to like what he saw Elijah do. He struck the water. And the water split. Where now is the Lord, the God of Elijah? He asked. And when he struck the water, it divided to the right and to the left, and he crossed over. And then the company of the prophets from Jericho who were watching said, "The spirit of Elijah is resting on Elisha." And they went to meet him and bowed to the ground before him. So much powerful imagery. And as I sit there as a beneficiary of someone who said, "I see something in you," and God calling me at a young age into ministry, and I sit there and it honestly just fills me with awe and humility of just sitting there in that space and saying, "God, I get to do this for a living." And watching that imagery of Elisha picking up the cloak after years of transition and going on and continuing to do incredible ministry for God. Here's this language. I actually want to go back, Sean, to the Psalm verse that I skipped over. Because Elisha's humility here reminded me so much of this Psalm passage in chapter 110, verse 3. This is should be our response when God calls us. "Your people will offer themselves freely on the day of your power. God, in holy garments, from the womb of the morning, the dew of your youth will be yours." I love that imagery. Like, "God, call me, send me." This comes from this Isaiah chapter 6 passage. It's not on the screen, okay, but it's this concept of where Isaiah the prophet, another famous prophet in the Old Testament, hears from God a prophecy of what's to come in Revelation and what's to come where all of these animals and these creatures will be singing out to God, "Holy, holy, holy, the Lord God Almighty who was and is to come." Perhaps you've heard the song Revelation from 20 years ago, okay? And so Isaiah hears this, and God says, "Who will be my chosen one?" And Isaiah says, "God, send me, I'll go. I will go to the nation of Israel and I will call out their sin and their evilness and their sexual idolatry and their addictions and their idolatries in other areas and their chasing after wealth." And so he calls him and Isaiah says, "Send me, Lord, I'll go. Your people will offer themselves freely on the day of your power and holy garments. From the womb of the morning till the dew of your youth will be yours." I just love that humility. And so here's how I want to close today. Because the story really shows us two things about Elijah's character. Because this is an Elijah series. But like I said, the first week if you were here, that first story was more about the faith of the widow. Because we already knew Elijah was a rock star. But it showed us and exposed in us the faith of this widow. And so first what we have here is just the humility it takes for leaders to see something in the next generation. Or not even the next generation from an age standpoint, but just the next call of leaders. And to go to them and say, "I see something in you. Yeah, you might fail, you might make mistakes, you might not shower all weekend at D-Now, but I see something in you." And then giving them opportunities to mess up and to make mistakes and to serve and to use their gifts. And so it requires us as a church, which we've always been passionate about, calling the next. And I know my time is going to come very soon. It's already coming of where I'm seeing middle schoolers and high schoolers and trying as often as I can to allow them to referee out there with me on football fields and basketball courts and to help me serve in the First Impressions team and opening up doors and to go out and to talk to people because you're like, man, give as many people opportunities because you never know when the next Elisha is going to be around. So first, that we can learn from the stories is the concept of humility. But the second is the concept of faith, just like we've talked about throughout this whole series, of how Elisha left everything to follow God. And when God calls you to serve, to give, to chase, to be, say yes and watch God work. Will you pray with me? Hey, God, thank you so much for this space. Thank you for the scriptures. Thank you for Elijah just being our example of what it looks like to chase after you. And thank you for our example of Elisha being another example of what it means to drop everything and follow. I thank you for the example, God, of humility and what it looks like to call the next generation, God, that we're only as strong as a church that represents all people. And so, God, may we never sit in our pride. May we always continue to seek after the next. In your name I pray.